All right, so let's dive into this Vietnamese real estate world. You sent over some fascinating articles about these brand new laws hitting the scene August 1st.
Yeah, big changes.
We're talking land law, real estate business law, housing law, even a little bit of the credit institutions law. It's quite a package
It
deal.
really is. It shows, that Vietnam is serious about kind of reshaping their real estate
Oh, yeah.
landscape. All these laws are really interconnected, and they're touching on everything, from how you get the land to how you finance these projects.
And for this deep dive, our mission is to try to help everyone figure out what these changes actually mean, right? Break down the key points, explore those ripple effects, and maybe uncover a few surprises along the way.
Definitely. Yeah, I think there's a lot to unpack here. Maybe we can start with one of the most talked about changes, which is land acquisition for commercial housing projects.
Right, because under the old rules, the state would often just acquire the land and then hand it over to the developers. But now,
Now that's gone.
that's out the window. It's up to investors to negotiate directly with those landowners.
That's right. So
Wow.
that move to a more direct negotiation process, could really speed things up. But it also adds a layer of complexity,
Oh, for sure.
especially for foreign investors. I mean, imagine trying to navigate land ownership in a different country with different legal systems and cultural norms.
It makes those real estate reality shows look like a walk in the park. But it also raises some really important questions, right? So if foreign investors can't get land directly from the state, does that limit their options?
Well, it certainly shifts their focus. Now they're primarily looking at acquiring existing projects rather than starting from scratch. And this could lead to a rise in joint ventures with foreign investors seeking out
Makes sense.
local partners who already have land and understand the intricacies
All the ins and
out of
outs.
that
So
negotiation.
we might see a whole new wave of collaboration, strategic partnerships emerging
Really?
from this change. Okay, now let's shift gears a little bit and talk about another area that's really making waves, which is deposits for off-plan housing. So the new laws have capped these deposits at 5% of the sale price, and developers can't collect that money until the property is almost ready.
This is a major win for buyers. In the past, there were cases where developers collected huge deposits and then just kind of sat on the money
Sat on it.
while the project stalled. So this cap really helps protect buyers from that.
It's like a safety net for people who are putting their hard-earned savings into this dream home, right? So that's fantastic for buyers, but what does this actually mean for developers themselves, right? 5% deposit doesn't sound like a huge cash injection to get a project off the ground.
Yeah, that's the trade-off, right? So while it protects buyers, this new rule could make it tougher for developers, especially smaller ones, to secure that upfront funding that they need. They might have to, get more creative with financing or focus on smaller projects with lower, initial costs.
So it could reshape that landscape of development, favoring those who have, bigger pockets or can find really innovative ways to fund these projects.
Yeah, I think you'll see a lot more partnerships between developers and investors to try to get those funds
Yeah,
or
definitely.
those projects.
Okay, now let's talk about money, shall we? Let's unpack these changes related to bank guarantees. So buyers now have the power to choose whether or not they actually want a bank guarantee from the
This
developers.
is where things get really interesting, I think. So if a buyer opts for a bank guarantee, it provides them with that financial protection in case the
Supposed
developer
to deliver.
fails to deliver. But it also means that the developer has to pay
Of course.
for that guarantee. And those costs are, often passed on
To the buyer.
to the buyer as a higher price.
It's a balancing act for buyers, right? You're weighing the peace of mind of having a guarantee versus potentially having to pay a higher price. But here's the real question. How much choice will buyers really have in a market
That's the big question.
where developers often, hold the upper hand, can buyers realistically say, no, I don't want a bank guarantee, and still get the property they want.
Right. That's a very valid point. And it's something that we'll have to see.
Yeah.
You know, as these new laws are put into practice.
Yeah.
I mean, if developers make bank guarantees, you know, a non-negotiable part of the contract, then buyers might feel pressured to accept, even if they'd prefer to avoid those costs.
Yeah, it's a good reminder that just because the laws change doesn't mean that those market dynamics will change.
Totally. Yeah, exactly. It's going to take, you know,
some time
for things to shake out.
To trickle down.
Yeah.
Now, let's move on to another aspect of these new laws.
Okay.
That's caught my eye, which is this concept of hybrid enterprises.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
This is a significant change.
Yeah.
And I think it could really, you know, reshake that competitive landscape.
Okay.
It recognizes that not all foreign invested companies are created equal.
Right.
So those with, you know, lower foreign ownership
mm-hmm.
will now have more flexibility.
Okay.
In the real estate business, similar to domestic companies.
So it's not just like you're either foreign.
Right.
Or you're domestic.
It's not just black and white.
It's like, what's that percentage?
Exactly.
Of foreign investment.
That level of foreign investment mm-hmm. is crucial in determining the company's rights and obligations.
So imagine like a company.
Exactly.
That just has like 5% foreign investment.
Right.
Suddenly they've got all these new opportunities.
Right. They might be able to, you know, acquire land in zones previously restricted
right.
to domestic companies, or they might face different tax structures.
It adds like a whole new dimension to the market. Mm. It could really encourage more diverse forms of investment.
Totally.
Okay, now let's talk about
okay.
this expansion of the business scope for both domestic and foreign entities.
Yeah.
What are some of the key changes there that stand out?
I think one of the most striking changes
okay.
is that foreign companies can now invest in building infrastructure for projects.
Wow.
And then lease out the land.
Wow.
And this was previously, you know, reserved only for domestic companies.
So foreign companies.
Right.
Have way more options to get involved now,
mm-hmm.
which could lead to some really innovative investment strategies.
Absolutely. This could, you know, spark a whole new, you know, wave of creativity.
Yeah.
In the market.
Yeah.
With companies, you know, finding new ways.
Right.
To participate and potentially, you know, even leading to more mergers and acquisitions.
Yeah.
As they seek to, you know, combine expertise and resources.
Get a whole new playbook.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's turn our attention now to the process of transferring projects.
Okay.
So these new laws seem to be making this process a little bit smoother.
Right.
But with some important caveats.
Yeah.
What do we need to know?
Well, one welcome change is, you know, the elimination of the mandatory land use
right.
certificate
okay.
for project transfers.
Okay.
So this is going to streamline that process.
Saves everybody time and money.
Save time and money. However, you know, strict conditions remain in place to prevent
okay.
speculative trading
right.
and ensure that projects are viable
right.
and well-managed.
It's like they're saying, we're making things easier, but we're not letting go of the reins completely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's a balancing act between facilitating business and, you know, maintaining responsible development.
Right.
And one, you know, interesting detail is that, credit institutions transferring projects, to recover debt.
Oh, okay.
Don't get any special treatment.
Right.
Everyone plays by the same rules.
Everyone plays by the same rules.
Tough rules.
So no more shortcuts or loopholes.
Exactly.
For those who are trying to offload those troubled projects, right? This underscores the government's commitment to fairness mm-hmm. and transparency in the market.
Right.
Okay, now let's dive into another key area.
Right.
Land rent and fees.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like annual land rent is kind of becoming the norm with fewer exceptions
mm-hmm.
for those one-time payments.
Right. This is a significant change, you know, that could impact both domestic and foreign investors.
Okay.
You know, foreign investors who often prefer the predictability of a one-time payment
right.
might find this
a little less appealing.
Less appealing.
Yeah.
You know, domestic investors, on the other hand, might face increasing costs
right.
as land values rise.
Right.
You know, pushing up those annual rents.
It's a good reminder that investing in Vietnamese real estate requires a long-term perspective.
Exactly.
Understanding those costs mm-hmm. can fluctuate
yeah. over time.
Over time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Last stop on this part of our deep dive.
Uh-huh.
This contentious issue of land price adjustments.
Right.
So local governments now
yeah.
have to adjust their land price tables yeah, annually
yeah. Yeah.
to reflect the market values.
Which can be a bit of a tightrope walk.
It can be, yeah.
We've seen this play out in Ho Chi Minh City.
Yeah.
Where those proposed land price increases.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some as high as 50 times.
Wow.
The previous values.
Wow.
Triggered, you know, a wave of opposition.
I bet.
From citizens.
Yeah.
Concerned about affordability.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, people are worried about those kinds of jumps.
Understandably, though.
It could have a ripple effect on everything, you know.
Yeah.
From property taxes to the cost of living.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It highlights the challenge of, you know, finding the right balance.
Right.
Ensuring those accurate land valuations.
Yeah.
While minimizing the burden on citizens.
Right.
And avoiding those unintended consequences. It's a complex equation.
It is, yeah.
With a lot of moving parts.
Yeah.
And speaking of moving parts.
Okay.
Let's take a closer look at one change.
Okay.
That's been generating a lot of buzz, which is this elimination of the land price framework.
You're right. That was a pretty big move. Can you remind us
yeah.
what that framework was all about?
Yeah.
And why they decided to scrap it?
Sure. So previously, Vietnam had this fixed land price framework.
Okay.
You know, set price ranges
mm-hmm.
for different types of land
mm-hmm.
in different regions.
Yeah, okay.
And this this framework was updated every 5 years.
Okay.
Unless there was like a major market shift.
Look at big.
Like a 20% price swing.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And it also put a cap on how high local governments could set their land prices.
So it was meant to kind of
right.
keep land prices in check.
Right, exactly.
Prevent
right.
things from getting too out of control.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like it wasn't perfect.
It wasn't perfect. The problem was that this framework often lagged behind,
mm-hmm.
you know, the actual market.
Okay.
So the official prices
right.
didn't always match what people were actually paying.
Right, right.
Which created opportunities for undervaluation and, you know, sometimes even corruption.
It makes sense that they wanted to try to move towards a system that's more,
right.
you know, responsive to market realities.
Yeah, to reflect what was happening in the market.
Yeah. But how does this new system work? Like, who decides what the land is worth now?
So now the responsibility falls on the local governments.
Oh, okay.
So they are required to adjust their land price tables every year.
Oh, wow. Every year.
Every year yeah. to reflect what's happening in the market.
Okay.
So the idea mm-hmm. is to keep those prices
right.
more closely aligned with actual transaction values.
Sounds good in theory, but we've already seen how controversial these adjustments can be.
Totally. Yeah.
Right, like in Ho Chi Minh City.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of anxiety around, you know, the potential for sudden price hikes.
Yeah.
You know, homeowners and businesses
yeah.
Worry about,
right.
you know, higher taxes.
Of course.
And fees.
Yeah.
And it creates you know, a real challenge
yeah.
for the government to balance those market forces
right.
with, you know, social equity.
It's like they're trying to thread a needle, right?
Exactly.
Trying to find that sweet spot where land is valued fairly, mm-hmm. but also without
right.
putting too much pressure on people's wallets.
Exactly.
Okay, now let's not forget about the developers.
Right.
Who are kind of stuck in the middle of all this. How does this change affect their operations?
It's a bit of a mixed bag for them.
Okay.
On the one hand, they could benefit
okay.
from higher compensation
okay.
when their land is acquired for projects.
Right, right.
So this could help projects get off the ground faster.
So faster project launches, that's a plus. Right.
That's always, you know, a good thing.
But I imagine there's a flip side to this coin.
There is. There's a flip side.
Okay.
You know, on the other hand, they'll also face higher
okay.
land rental costs.
Okay.
Especially for projects that are built on land.
Okay.
That's leased annually.
Okay.
So with, you know, the price framework gone
mm-hmm.
and those annual adjustments in place,
yeah.
those, you know, lease payments
okay.
could increase significantly over time.
So faster project launches.
Right.
But potentially higher operating costs.
Right.
It definitely adds a new layer of complexity.
It does.
For developers who are trying to plan ahead.
It does. They'll need to, sharpen their pencils.
Right.
And really, analyze those long-term financial implications.
Right.
Now, while we're talking about, land and its complexities.
Okay.
Let's delve into another interesting concept that was introduced by these new laws, and that's leasehold rights.
Okay.
For investors who pay annual land rent.
This one definitely caught my attention. Yeah. I understand it's caused some head scratching and debate.
It has, yeah.
Can you break it down for us? What are leasehold rights?
Yeah, it's a bit of a tricky concept.
Yeah.
That initial broad definition of the law led to, some confusion.
Right, right.
But essentially what it, what it grants is certain rights to people who lease land on an annual basis.
Okay.
Allowing them to, transfer those rights.
Right.
To someone else.
So even though they don't own the land outright,
right,
they have some kind of transferable rights associated with it.
Right, exactly.
But what exactly are those rights, and why did it spark so much debate?
Well, the controversy stemmed from the initial lack of clarity about what exactly those rights entailed.
Okay.
But, the 2024 land law clarifies that, these rights must be connected to something built on the land.
So it's not about the land itself. It's what's on it.
Exactly. Yeah. So you only acquire these leasehold rights if you've actually built something on the land according to the plan.
Right.
Registered.
Right.
The land use.
Okay.
And importantly, prepaid any compensation, support, or resettlement costs that haven't been, deducted from your lease payments.
So there are some strings attached.
There are.
It's not just a free pass.
Not a free for all.
To transfer anything you want.
No.
Okay, so it's a system designed to kind of balance the interests of the state, the person leasing the land, and anyone they might transfer those rights to.
Right.
It's another layer of complexity.
It is, yeah.
For investors to consider, especially those involved in, and acquisitions of these projects.
Right.
So they'll really need to make sure they understand,
they need to understand
the value of those leasehold rights and that all the, responsibilities and rights related to the lease are clearly spelled out.
Transparency and clear communication are key.
But what's particularly interesting is that the 2024 land law goes a step further.
It does.
And actually recognizes the right to lease, mortgage, and even use those leasehold rights.
As capital.
As capital. Wow. So these rights have.
They do.
Real financial clout. They can be used in all sorts of transactions.
Exactly.
That's a big shift. It could open up.
It's a game changer.
Some new possibilities for those who are, really savvy. It shows how Vietnam's real estate market is.
It's evolving.
Evolving and becoming more sophisticated.
It's becoming more sophisticated.
Creating both opportunities and challenges.
All right.
Speaking of challenges.
Okay.
Let's dive back into this issue of local governments. Adjusting those land price tables.
Right.
Annually. We talked about the potential for, public pushback.
Yeah.
But what about the tax implications?
That's another piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
Ho Chi Minh City's experience
really
highlights that potential conflict.
Yeah.
So those proposed adjustments, some as high as 50 times the previous values.
Wow.
Has sparked concerns about affordability and the potential for a heavier tax burden.
It's easy to see why people are worried. Those kinds of increases could have a ripple effect on everything.
Everything.
Right? From property taxes to the cost of doing business.
And it's not just citizens who are voicing concerns. The Ho Chi Minh City Tax Department has also, raised a red flag.
Okay.
Worried that... using the current land price table, which is significantly lower than market prices, could lead to reduced state revenue.
Makes sense.
And accusations of mismanagement.
So you've got citizens who are worried about affordability.
Right.
You've got the tax department who's worried about losing revenue.
Exactly.
This puts the government in a really tough spot.
It's a tough balancing act.
It is, yeah.
And finding that sweet spot is crucial.
Yeah.
You know, they need to ensure fairness, transparency.
All right.
And, you know, fiscal responsibility.
Right.
While also, you know, minimizing the negative impact on citizens and the economy.
It's like solving a Rubik's Cube, right? Yeah. Every move you make has a potential to
scramble
something else. What about other areas of Vietnam? Are they facing similar challenges?
So Hanoi is another, you know, interesting case study.
Okay.
While they haven't adjusted, you know, their land price table yet.
Okay.
They've seen some wild swings.
Really?
In the market.
Okay.
Especially, you know, after land auctions.
Okay.
In the suburbs. Huh. Where, you know, winning bids.
Okay.
Have blown past, starting prices.
Wow.
And even, market values.
Sounds like a recipe for, you know, speculation and potential instability in the market.
It's definitely raising some eyebrows.
I bet.
You know, the Ministry of Natural Resources and Environment has stepped in, urging you know, local governments to you know, take a hard look at their land price tables and make adjustments if needed,
right,
to prevent
this
kind of speculative frenzy,
right,
and keep the market on solid ground.
So the government's trying to kind of find that balance between encouraging development, but also preventing the market from, you know, going haywire.
Exactly.
It's a tough job.
It is.
It seems like they're facing, you know, criticism.
From all sides.
From all sides.
Yeah.
It's a tricky situation made even more complex.
It is.
By, you know, some ambiguity in those transitional provisions.
Right.
Of the 2024 land law.
Yeah.
So local governments are still kind of figuring out.
They are.
The best way to implement these changes.
Yeah. It's going to take some time.
They could definitely use some, like, clear guidance.
They could.
From the central government to, you know, navigate this.
Exactly.
New terrain.
Right.
Clear communication.
Mm-hmm.
Transparency.
Yeah.
And a willingness to listen to everyone involved are crucial for a smooth transition. Now, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about a change that's opened up.
Okay.
Some interesting possibilities, this expanded business scope for both domestic and foreign entities.
Right.
I'm curious to hear more about this. What are some of the kind of the highlights?
I think one of the, you know, one of the most significant changes is the introduction of, you know, a new business activity.
Okay.
Which is the right to deal in land use rights.
Okay.
With technical infrastructure.
Okay.
In real estate projects.
Okay.
So this means that domestic companies can now receive transfers of these rights with the intention of, you know, selling them, leasing them, or even subleasing them.
So it's the creating a whole new market.
It is, yeah.
For these land use rights.
Exactly.
Which could, you know, boost investment and development.
Absolutely.
And this isn't just limited to domestic companies.
It's not.
Foreign companies now also have the right to.
They do.
Invest in building that infrastructure for projects.
Hmm.
And then transferring, leasing, or subleasing.
Right.
Those land use rights, that's a major shift.
It is.
Before, that was something.
Only domestic companies.
That only domestic companies could do.
Could do.
It seems like these new laws are, you know, leveling the playing field for foreign investors in some ways.
It's definitely opening doors and encouraging more foreign investment in Vietnam's real estate sector.
But like with any big change, there's always potential downsides to consider.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any concerns about, you know,
I mean,
risks or unintended consequences from this expanded business scope?
Yeah, one concern is that it you know, it could make real estate transactions you know, more complex and risky.
Yeah.
So with more players entering the market and you know, new business activities popping up. The potential for, you know, disputes.
Of course.
Legal challenges and even fraud could increase.
Right.
You know?
Transparency, careful due diligence,
yeah,
and a solid legal framework.
Yeah.
Are going to be so essential.
They are, yeah.
To mitigating those risks.
And, you know, it's not just about, you know, preventing, you know, negative outcomes.
Right.
It's about ensuring.
Yeah.
That these new opportunities are used responsibly.
Responsibly.
And sustainably to benefit, you know,
right,
both investors.
Right.
And the wider community.
In the end, the goal should be to create a real estate market that's
exactly
dynamic, transparent.
Mm-hmm.
And beneficial.
Beneficial for everyone, for everyone involved.
Involved, yeah.
And this brings us back to, you know, the importance of clear regulations.
Right.
You know, effective enforcement.
Yeah.
And, you know, open communication between the government, businesses, and citizens.
It's a continuous process, right?
It is.
Of adaptation and improvement.
It is.
But it's essential for the long-term health
absolutely
of Vietnam's real estate sector.
Right.
But let's not forget about, you know, the people who are often
right
most affected by these changes, home buyers.
Right.
Especially those who are buying, you know, off-plan properties.
Exactly.
How do these new laws impact their interests?
So the new laws introduce some significant safeguards for home buyers.
Okay.
Particularly when it comes to off-plan purchases.
Right.
And one of the, you know, the biggest changes is you know, that cap on deposits.
Right. We touched on that earlier.
Yeah.
Can you just refresh our memory?
Yeah.
What are the new rules and why were they put in place?
So in the past, developers could collect these, you know, large deposits.
Right.
From buyers early.
Yeah.
You know, early in the process.
Early in the process, yeah.
Sometimes even before construction began.
Wow.
And this raised concerns about, you know, developers misusing funds.
Right.
Or projects stalling.
Yeah.
You know, leaving buyers in a precarious position.
It's a scary thought for anyone.
Right.
Putting their hard-earned money into, you know, a future home.
Right.
What if the project never gets off the ground?
Exactly.
Right.
That's why the new real estate business law introduces this cap.
Okay.
Limiting deposits to no more than 5%.
Okay.
Of the selling price or the lease purchase price.
So a much smaller upfront commitment for buyers.
Exactly.
Reducing their financial risks.
Yes.
But is this only for, you know, off-plan housing or are there other types of properties where this deposit cap applies?
So the law is very specific.
Yeah.
You know, it applies to deposits for, you know, buying or lease purchasing.
Okay.
Houses, construction works, or floor areas in construction works.
Correct.
That haven't been completed yet.
So, yes. Primarily targets those off-plan properties.
Exactly.
Where the risks are greatest.
Right.
For buyers.
Right.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. But when can developers actually collect this 5%?
So here's another important change.
Okay.
Developers can only collect
okay
the deposit when those houses or construction works
okay
meet all the requirements to be put into business.
Okay.
So this means they need to have all their ducks in a row, you know, land use rights, financial obligations fulfilled, construction progressed to a certain stage before they can ask buyers for any money.
It's like a safety net.
Exactly.
For buyers to make sure that the project is, you know,
right
well underway
yeah
and that there's a much higher chance that they're actually going to get
exactly
what they paid for.
Yeah. It significantly reduces the risk of, you know, developers taking deposits and then disappearing.
Right.
Or, you know, delaying the project indefinitely.
It feels like, you know, this regulation really shifts the power dynamics.
It does.
In favor of the buyers.
Absolutely.
It provides that much needed
it does
protection.
Yeah.
Especially in a market where, you know, off-plan purchases are so common.
Right.
And the risks can be significant.
Right.
However, like with any new regulation.
Right.
There are those potential downsides
yeah
and unintended consequences.
To consider.
To consider, yeah. What are some of the concerns?
So one concern
okay
is that, you know, it might make it harder
okay
for developers to you know, secure the funding.
Right.
They need for new projects.
Okay.
So relying on smaller deposits.
Right.
You know, it could slow down.
Yeah.
development.
Makes sense.
Particularly for smaller developers who might not have
right.
as much access to, you know, mm-hmm. other financing options.
So it's that classic dilemma.
It is, yeah.
Trying to protect buyers, mm-hmm. but also ensuring a healthy and vibrant
exactly.
real estate market.
Yeah. yeah. And some argue that, you know, this cap could also, you know, limit options for buyers.
Okay.
Who might be willing to pay a larger deposit up front.
Interesting.
In exchange for, you know, a better price or other incentives.
So like any market regulation, there's that trade-off.
Exactly.
Between control and flexibility.
Exactly.
And it remains to be seen, you know, how this will play out in practice.
Mm-hmm.
Whether any, you know, adjustments or refinements will be needed down the road.
Exactly.
It's a dynamic situation that requires
it is.
Careful monitoring and analysis.
It does.
But let's move on to another area where these new laws aim to
okay.
protect buyers, this option to require a bank guarantee from developers.
Right. So this is an interesting addition to the real estate business law.
Yeah.
You know, it essentially gives buyers the choice of whether or not to require a bank guarantee
okay.
for the developer's financial obligations.
Okay.
Particularly if the developer.
Yeah.
doesn't deliver the property
right
as promised.
So it's like this extra layer of protection.
It is.
But one that buyers can
opt out of
if they want,
if they choose to.
Yeah. What are the implications
yeah.
of making that choice?
So if a buyer chooses to require
yeah.
a bank guarantee,
mm-hmm.
You know, gives them that financial security.
Oh.
If the developer defaults,
right.
but it also means that the developer has to pay
right.
for that guarantee,
right?
And those costs are, you know, often passed on
to the buyer yeah.
in the form of you know, a higher purchase price.
So it's a trade-off.
It is, yeah,
between peace of mind,
right.
And affordability.
Exactly. It's a complex decision for buyers to make. Mm.
It is, yeah.
You know, weighing the potential benefits of a guarantee.
Yeah.
Against the potential, you know, cost.
Right. It's kind of like choosing between.
Right.
You know, insurance policies, right.
Exactly.
You have to kind of assess.
You have to assess your risk tolerance and your financial situation.
But the big question is, will buyers really have the power to say no?
That's the million-dollar question.
Right. In a market where developers often have the upper hand,
right.
can they really say no and still get the property that they want?
Right. That's a crucial point.
Yeah.
And, you know, in practice, the power dynamics
yeah.
between buyers and developers
right.
might heavily influence this decision.
Yeah.
You know, if developers make bank guarantees, you know, a non-negotiable part of their contracts, then buyers might, you know, feel pressured to accept, even if they'd rather
avoid the extra cost.
Avoid that extra cost, exactly.
It's a situation that needs, you know, close attention to make sure that buyers genuinely
right.
have a choice. And
yeah.
that they're not being strong-armed into accepting terms that aren't in their best interest.
Absolutely.
Right.
Transparency, you know, fair practices.
Yeah.
And strong consumer protection mechanisms
yeah.
are key to ensuring that this new option truly benefits buyers.
Right.
And it doesn't become just another tool for developers to, you know, leverage their position.
This is a good reminder that, you know, even with well-intentioned legal changes,
right.
it takes time for those changes to, you know, trickle down and really shift those market behaviors.
Totally.
It requires, you know, monitoring, vigilance,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes even, you know, further adjustments to make sure that
right.
the spirit of the law is reflected
exactly
in how things actually work.
Mm-hmm.
Taking a step back, what do all these changes kind of tell us
yeah.
about the overall direction of Vietnam's real estate market?
Well, it's a complex picture.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, the changes point towards a market that's maturing.
Okay.
Becoming more regulated.
Okay.
And, you know, trying to find that balance between
right.
attracting investment.
Right.
And protecting everyone involved.
So not a black and white situation.
Right.
More of an evolution.
Exactly.
With both, you know, opportunities and challenges.
Right. It's that kind of push and pull.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for example, the move away from, you know, state-led land acquisition to those direct negotiations with landowners, you know, suggests, you know, a shift towards a more market-driven approach.
Okay.
Could make things more efficient.
Yeah.
But it also requires investors to be, you know, more savvy and strategic.
And the focus on consumer protection with things like the deposit cap.
Right.
And the option for bank guarantees, you know, shows a growing awareness of the need to look out for those home buyers.
Absolutely.
Right.
You know, these changes, along with, you know, the stricter rules on project transfers and the push for, you know, more accurate land valuations, you know, signals that desire for more, you know, transparent and accountable real estate sector.
But it's not just about, like, tightening the screws, is it?
No, not at all.
Right. The expansion of the business scope for both
domestic
and foreign entities suggests that they're still, you know, open for business.
Right. Exactly. Open to investment.
And they recognize the need for that, you know, diverse participation in the market.
It's about finding that sweet spot.
Right.
A regulatory environment that that encourages responsible investment.
Right.
Protects consumers.
Right.
And fosters sustainable growth.
Which it's no easy feat.
No, it's not easy.
Right.
Creating a system that's both dynamic and stable.
Yeah.
Attracting investment.
Yeah.
While safeguarding everyone's interests.
Everyone's interests.
Requires, you know.
Constant adaptation.
Constant adaptation and fine-tuning.
And fine-tuning, yeah. It's a process.
It is.
But, you know, what I find really encouraging
is
this growing recognition of the need for transparency, dialogue, and collaboration.
Absolutely.
So the debate around, like, you know, those land price adjustments, for example, really shows the importance of involving, you know, citizens, businesses, experts to find solutions that, you know,
work for everyone.
Work for everyone.
Right.
That's a hopeful note to end on.
I think so, yeah.
I think so, too, yeah.
I think through, you know, open communication.
Yeah.
And a willingness to adapt.
Yeah.
You know, Vietnam's real estate market.
Yeah.
Can really thrive.
Thrive, yeah.
And contribute to the country's overall development.
Overall development, yeah. So anyone who's keeping an eye on this market, these new laws and how they're being implemented are going to be fascinating to watch unfold. We'll see, you know?
Right.
New strategies emerge.
New
challenges pop up.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, a continued evolution towards a more mature and sustainable sector.
Towards a more, you know, balanced and you know, sustainable sector, exactly.
Well, this deep dive has given you a great overview of this evolving landscape. These new laws, as we've been talking about, present both opportunities and challenges.
Right.
And their long-term impacts are still unfolding.
They are, yeah.
What do you think these changes mean for the future of Vietnam's real estate market? Will it become, you know, more competitive, more transparent?
Yeah.
Or something else entirely. There's certainly a lot to watch, analyze, and discuss.
A lot to watch.
In the coming months and years.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's going to be an interesting, you know, few years to watch this market.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining me on this deep dive.
Thanks for having me.